Good morning, everyone. My name's Trey. I'm a drug addict and an alcoholic.
That's right.
Whew, I didn't think I was going to be nervous once I got up here. Well, what it was like, what had it happened, and what it's like now. Well, I got wasted. It sucked. I got sober. I got better. Meeting's open. Anyway, I was born in 1961, Gainesville, Georgia. Grew up here in Metro Atlanta over in DeKalb County. Relatively good home, not too much chaos. Did have some alcoholism in the family. Two grandfathers were both alcoholics. One died drunk, one died sober. I really wasn't made aware of that, however. It was kind of a hush-hush kind of thing within the family. I had my first drink or first sip of alcohol when I was in the fourth grade. I was on a plane to Colorado to go skiing with my family, and my mom gave me a sip of a screwdriver. So it was also the first drink I knew the name of it. Also the first drink I come to enjoy. The only thing I remember is it made me feel warm. I didn't like the way it tasted. It's hot, but it made me feel warm. I do remember that. And then the first drink I took kind of on my own, if you will, was I was 12 years old, graduating from elementary school. We didn't have middle school. I found myself off this little stage off the side of had a band and dance, and it was pretty cool. And this girl pulls out a couple of little mini bottles of liquor and pours them into some Coca-Cola bottles. You know, they were glass. It was the dark ages. And we sipped from these Coca-Cola bottles. And honestly, I don't recall feeling any effect of the alcohol. However, being very insecure, I was the shortest kid in seventh grade and deathly afraid of all the girls that I had crushes on. Despite that fact, I threw down on the dance floor with the hottest girl in the seventh grade. I don't know if it was real liquid courage or I faked it, but what I got was attention, notoriety, and that word, acceptance, and I liked it. Not much of a decision there. I looked to the left, I looked to the right, and my friends were doing this. It didn't seem like a big deal. My parents drank. You know, it was legal. I mean, not for a 12-year-old, but it was legal. Not that big a deal. Now, going on into high school, honestly, I pretty much shied away from alcohol early on. Started going to parties and stuff like that, and people get drunk, make the fool of themselves, puke. And frankly, I didn't like the way, you know, beer was very readily available. I didn't like the way it tasted. It tastes like piss. So I stayed away from it. I'd go to parties and get beer out of the keg and pour it out and go get back in line and fill it up again. I didn't really care for it. And as far as drugs were concerned, I kind of drew a line in the sand. You know, in the sand, those are illegal. I'll never do that. You know, I would never do that. But you know, as far as you know, the drinking and stuff concerned. I remember people talking, one of the things that turned me off from alcohol was people saying they didn't remember what they did the night before. And the funny thing about it is I thought they were lying. I didn't realize that blackouts were real yet. I thought they were just saying that so they couldn't be accountable for making the fool of themselves the night before or the weekend before, you know, the high school party or whatever. But when I was in the 10th grade, I started leaving school campus, okay? And I'm going to start getting into my drug history, and I'm sorry if it offends you, but it's my story. Started leaving school campus and with some guys, and this guy, Doug, would bring weed. And Doug would, he offered me weed one time, the first time. And because I had drawn that little line and sign, I'm not going to do that, and I didn't do it. No big deal. But we did this constantly. You know, we left campus illegally. As a matter of fact, the driver, Ray, Ray didn't get stoned either. Ray was 15. His parents let him drive to school. Ray's parents also hosted keg parties at their home. Fast forward about 20 years, Ray did like 6 years in a Texas prison. He killed somebody. Ray still drinks. It's kind of scary, but rewind back to the 1970s, and eventually I said, pass that back here to me. And I took a couple of puffs off that joint. And I'm here to tell you that I definitively felt nothing. However, I went back to Ms. Brown's biology class, and I brought the house down. By the end of the day, half the school wanted to transfer into that biology class because it sounded like so much fun, because Trey would get stoned at lunch and give Ms. Brown a hard time. And fact of the matter is, I didn't feel a thing. I didn't feel a thing. I faked it. I played the stoner role. And again, I got attention. I got notoriety. I got acceptance. It's the key to my happiness. I got acceptance, and I liked it. And we used to use this phrase, he's cool, she's cool. And that meant you got high, you know, meaning smoke weed. Or you were a drinker who really didn't look down on somebody who got loaded, got high, got stoned. And so I'm in. Now, the fact of the matter is, I still really hadn't got stoned. And I didn't really get stoned until the next year. Went to a party, got stoned. It was great. But what I got, it was great because I still had this like height issue, okay? I'm a junior in high school. I've never asked a girl out. I'm probably 5'3", you know, 110 maybe. And I was deathly afraid to ask girls out because all the ones I like were all taller than me, you know, and I just didn't do it. But when I got stoned, I was 6 feet tall and just hip, slick, and cool. And things changed, you know? Got myself a girlfriend, got my first job. And things turned around, got more interesting for me, got more fun. Now, late in my junior year, you know, I was a pretty good student all through school. My parents stayed on me with that kind of stuff. And I'd played a lot of sports, but football, my passion, outgrew me. I'm still this little guy, and I became a serious tennis player. At the end of my junior year, I really had some decisions to make. I sent out my first college applications, and I made some decisions on where I was going to go to school. And I had some opportunities at college scholarships, playing tennis at some smaller schools. But my dad went to UGA. I'd been going to Bulldog games since I was a little kid, and I got my acceptance letter from UGA. And then, of course, talk amongst my class was, I call them the two P's, pretty girls and parties. And I basically made my decision on where I was going to go to school based on those two things. And that was a problem. So all I got to do my senior year is graduate, and that's all I did. I got my report card a couple of days after graduation. I made 4 D's, and I mean, I only had four classes. I left school at 11:30 every day. That's when the party should have started, but actually it started about 7 a.m. every day when couple of guys from the football team, a couple of us from the tennis team, and a baseball player. We all loaded in the car, got stoned every single day before school. Anyway, I guess my parents looked at my report card and said, well, it's his senior year. I guess he's goofing off, and, you know, they're going to send me off to school and spend thousands of dollars for me to go to school. Now, I know a little better today. My kid comes home with straight D's. He's going to piss in a cup for me. There's no doubt about it. But anyway, now keep in mind, my parents don't have a clue. I don't come home drunk because I don't like alcohol. I mean, I would sip on beers and stuff like that, but, you know, I'd drop an Visine and, you know, breath mints and stuff like that. But my parents smoked cigarettes because they couldn't smell anything anyway. But so shortly before I go off to school, I go to this party in my neighborhood, and this is when the drinking started. And I was working at a hotel, and it's this annual end of the summer party. A bunch of guys, baseball. We played baseball and drank beer and smoked weed. And this guy says, "Let me get you a bottle of this liquor, man. It tastes like candy, you know." And we're schnapps. And I was like, "Sure." So I go to this party. Everybody's half crocked already, and I'm stoned. Of course, I was stoned all the time. And I drank this stuff, and man, it did. It tasted like candy. And I got faced. I mean, I got wasted out of my mind, and I had a scooter. I had to push my scooter home, You know, I wanted a car, or I wanted this really fancy stereo for my graduation. Didn't get it. I got this damn scooter, man, you know. But anyway, so I pushed my scooter home, and the last thing I remember was looking in seeing the silhouette of my parents in my bedroom door. And I'm lying on my back, and I'm just like violently ill. And I can't move. And I'm puking all over myself. And, you know, I talk to kids about this stuff a lot, and I tell them, this was my first brush with death. Because had my folks been there, there's a good chance I'd have choked on my own vomit and died that night, you know, like Jimi Hendrix or many other people who die that way. But anyway, and as they say, didn't stop me from drinking, that's for sure. So I go off to the University of Georgia, and I learned to drink. I learned no matter how good the alcohol, the liquor was, I didn't have to drink it like that, so I wouldn't fall down and puke and all that kind of stuff. But I learned to enjoy beer, just make sure it's ice cold, maybe a little salty food in front of it. And I learned to enjoy some beer. And then I also started getting into a lot of other stuff. Again, immediately I gravitate toward, you know, the potheads and start, you know, getting stoned all the time. Start blowing off classes. I mean, it was an absolute tragedy. Start doing other drugs. I had this bright idea right before finals. I'd stay up all night, do some speed, and, you know, I'll ace the finals and you know, make a C in the class, and I'll be able to come back to school the next semester. And it didn't happen like that at all, not at all. As a matter of fact, I went home for Christmas break, and I was sweating the report card kind of, because I knew, you know, they put me on academic probation, but I knew my dad wouldn't send me back. And my prayers were answered. I literally walked out of a final, went out into a field, got stoned, and prayed for my grades to like magically be passing so I could come back to the party in Athens. And I guess it was partially answered, because the report card did not come. Literally get back to school, my mom drops me off. It was like a sigh, I'm back, I'm here, you know? And like 2 hours later, my dorm phone rings. And it was my mom, and the grades had come. And it was like two F's and a D, you know? And it wasn't good. And I tell you about that part because I wanted to stay. I knew I had an opportunity, I wanted to stay. I wanted to stay at the party. So I went and I wrote above my desk. I wrote, "Only get high on the weekends." I didn't even know, and I was doing my own addiction tests. It worked. Do you believe me? No, it didn't work at all. As a matter of fact, my friends and I would be in the dorm. "Dude, what's that? What's that on the wall? What are you talking about here? It's Monday." As they say, any day was a day to get loaded, you know. And, well, eventually, you know, the proverbial UGA butt came to the backside, and I was kicked out. And I tried not to go home. I was afraid to face the music. But Dad stopped putting money in the bank account. I couldn't get a job, didn't have a car. They didn't even let me take that stupid scooter to school with me. So I couldn't get to my job or a job. And so I go home, and I'm so sorry. And of course, my dad's response was, "You sure are." And I heard that a lot over the years. And you know, I started the big plan. I'm gonna go to community college and get back to Athens. You know, but that was never gonna happen. Started working in bars and restaurants and going to school. I got into a relationship, and I was somewhat accountable because I had this girlfriend, you know, and she was going to school. And I did finally learn to withdraw from classes. Back in Athens, I didn't have to take all those F's. As a matter of fact, they wouldn't have booted me out if I'd have withdrawn from all those classes. But I was stoned at orientation, and it went right over my head that I could just go withdraw, and they'd keep taking my dad's checks, and they wouldn't have booted me out. But when I'm at community college, I learned I could withdraw from my classes. And then I also learned that if I withdrew from my classes at the very beginning of the semester, that they would write a rent check. I mean, they would write a refund check to the guy who wrote the tuition check. That would be Cliff White. And my name is Trey, but I'm the third Cliff, which means my driver's license says Cliff White on it. And so I'd go down to the bank and I'd cash a check and I'd have more money for booze, drugs, and dates. And, you know, the fact of the matter is I've become a liar, a cheat, and a thief. I leave my folks' house at 7:45 in the morning. They think I'm going to the community college. You know, I'm going to the bowling alley, stone, to play Asteroids, you know. Go to a girl's house or whatever, you know. And, you know, I got locked up. I got pulled over drinking and driving. And I got really lucky. I looked about 16. I was still somewhat clean cut. I was about 20. I might have been about to turn 21. And I had a whole lot of narcotics in my car, packaged for individual sale. And they did not search my car. I would have gone away for a long time. And I'm telling you, that little 16-year-old looking kid would not have survived prison. Ain't no way I would have survived prison. But I was more worried about the guys I owed the money for the drugs. But again, another escape from death, for as far as I'm concerned. So, of course, all other drugs start, you know, back in Athens, you know, it was acid and speed, and I don't think I really got into anything else. But, you know, cocaine really hit the scene. I eventually stopped going to school. My girlfriend dumped me. You know, I'm in the nightclub business in Atlanta and bartending and serving food and stuff like that. And, you know, cocaine became my drug of choice. Well, I mean, I smoked pot. I mean, that was just like breathing, okay? But I started getting into cocaine, and, you know, I eventually started smoking cocaine, you know, actually before it was even, you know, crack fashionable. I mean, we were cooking our own cocaine, and, you know, I used needles, and, I mean, I just became a total train wreck. Now, somehow, some way, I convinced this girl to fall in love with me, and she was a great girl, and I knew I was a mess. I mean, I you know, it was always, if I got the right job, the right girl, the right apartment, the right car, I'll be okay, and I'll slow down, and it just wasn't happening. And we left Atlanta. We moved down to the coast of Mississippi, and she had been a chef's apprentice, and, you know, I had a background in food and beverage, and we'd go down there to open a restaurant, and the guy that had the money, he looked like a mobster, and I chickened out, you know. But I got away from hard drugs. I only smoked pot, you know, an ounce a day probably. But I started drinking like a fish. I mean, I just, you know, and I got engaged to this girl, and I mean, you know, I basically just, I mean, I just drank like a madman. And, you know, used to drive from Biloxi to Ocean Springs just out of my mind with this car that had a bad front end in it. It's amazing I didn't wind up in the Bay of Biloxi. I mean, it really, really is. And just, I can remember going to work in the morning. I worked at this restaurant, and I go in, and, you know, I could just, you know, the bartender would be like, Grand Marnier last night, huh? Plus, like, well, yeah, every night, you know. And, you know, it was horrible. And anyway, after we chickened out on this restaurant deal, we moved back to Atlanta, and she takes a job as a flight attendant and starts leaving town for 3 days at a time. You can imagine what I did. I got right back into hard drugs again and cocaine, and she'd come back, and all the money would be gone, and I'd be all strung out and super remorseful. I mean, you know, I hated myself. I had a deer rifle in my closet that I actually took it to my dad's house and gave it back to him because I looked at it way too many times for comfort level when she was out of town. I knew she's coming back, and it was like, oh my God, what have I done again and again and again? And you guys know the story, whether it's booze or drugs. Just hating myself. And I actually broke up with her because she only traveled like 6 or 9 days a month. And when she was around, I could not do what I wanted to do, which was use all the time. So I get this place by myself, and I stumbled into this good job making way too much money for a drug addict. And I went into my dad's office on January the 5th. It was January 5th, 1989. And despite the fact that I'd probably made about 7-8 grand in the last 5 or 6 weeks, I couldn't pay my rent. So therefore, I drank, snorted, shot up, smoked it all of it. Weighed about 135 pounds. I weigh a lot more than that. I'm not going to tell you how much, but I weigh a lot more than that today. I was a sick young man. Well, I had to come up with something. So my dad had no idea how much money I was making or how much dope I was using. But, you know, cocaine was expensive. So I'm a cocaine addict, Dad, you know. I need my rent money. You know, as far as he knew, I could do one bender, you know, one night and use all my money, you know, spend all my money on cocaine. But it wasn't like that at all. I used every day. I'm not going to do it tonight. You know, I've described this in meetings before. Shaking my head like this the whole way. Doing my checkout at the fancy Russian restaurant, you know. Oh, I'm going to make $250 tonight. And I'm on the adding machine over here, and I'm on the phone with the drug dealer over here. And my head's doing this at the same time. I'm not going to do it tonight, you know. And over and over again, down to, you know, 30-something, you know, 130-something pounds. But anyway, my dad calls a family doctor. And the doctor says, you know, your son should go to one of these meetings. I was like, what are you talking about? And it happened to be a Cocaine Anonymous meeting. And I figured my dad would write the rent check if I went. You know, I still got my job. I figured, you know, I want to stop doing cocaine. I've been wanting to stop doing cocaine for like 7 years. And so I went to the meeting, and something interesting happened there. I heard a whole bunch of people that sounded just like me. And they were laughing and carrying on like we do, you know, and it was like, this is cool. These people know how to not, you know, do cocaine. I was like, this is pretty cool, you know. They, you know, told me I never had to feel, because I did. I felt lower than whale shit. I mean, I felt so bad. I mean, I was so sick. You know, I'd probably detox for about 3 days and trying to figure out how I was going to get enough money to pay my rent. And then I, you know, crawled in my dad's office. But I said, you know, I was late there. I said, come back. You know, keep coming back. You know, I was like, that's cool. Come back tomorrow night. There's another meeting. Well, I got to work tomorrow night or whatever. But, you know, and just, you know. Just don't smoke any pot and don't drink and don't do what? You know, yeah, there's this phrase, and all other mind-altering substances. I was like, okay. I'm in. So for 18 days, 6 hours, and about 22 minutes, I didn't use. I wasn't counting or anything. Got a little weed from my friend at work and went home and, you know, the fact of the matter is I kind of had the power of choice back. I detoxed. I really hadn't had any compulsions for, you know, whatever, 18 days. But I got a little weed, went home, and I mean, I remember I probably stared at that joint for like an hour, you know. And I made the decision to get high. It's a Tuesday night. I was drinking by the weekend. 2 weeks later, I was doing cocaine. And I hadn't been doing it for a while, so I had some money. So I went on a big old bender. I lost my job within a few days. Thank God. A lot of people died doing a lot less dope than I did those couple of months there. So, but anyway, I lose that job. Start bouncing around from. I went back to the meeting after 30 days of not doing any coke and got my 30-day chip just so I could show my dad. Bullshit. God, it was such bullshit, but. Anyway, so I started bouncing around job to job. You know, one time I woke up in Panama City, like, you know, no money, gold chain. You know, then I remembered I came down with a guy from work, and he pulled into this hotel parking lot where I was at, you know, and I don't have any gas. So we pawned a gold chain, came back. A few weeks later, you know, I called actually my old girlfriend and told her, you know, that I'd really screwed up. I really needed some help. And we went to my parents' house and, you know, I fessed up again and started going to meetings again. I didn't quite get it yet, but I got myself 60 days that time and I went out on a Labor Day night or Sunday before Labor Day and bounced in and out just for a couple of weeks. And, you know, last time I picked up was or my sobriety date is, I consider it's September 26, 1989. So late that year, I finally learned how not to get loaded, how to live without booze and drugs. Because, man, it was probably a good 7-8 years where I just, you know, switch, stop, you know. And my life turned around 180 degrees. It was absolutely amazing. The compulsion was lifted pretty quick. I think I just reached the end. I really did. I wouldn't recommend it, but I did get in a relationship very early in sobriety. My first sponsor was going to be my wife. Her sobriety and my sobriety added it together and divided it by two. And he said, since it was more than a year, more than one, we could date, you know. It was pretty lame. But nonetheless, my life got a lot better. I got heavily involved. Now, what was really cool was my relapse, when I put 60 days together, like within a few days of starting over again there in July of that year, I get my dream job. I'm still in the restaurant and the bar industry, and I get my dream job of this beautiful new nightclub opening in Buckhead, and it was a jazz supper club. So I had this like class to it or whatever, and it was really cool. You know, I told them I started the program in January. They didn't know I had 7 days or whatever. But before we opened, I went to meetings every night, and that fellowship had meetings every night. And so, but then we opened, and then I had to work from like 7 at night to 3 to 5 o'clock in the morning. And so now I can only go to meetings on Sundays and Mondays, and because I'd never been to an AA meeting. Well, so when my wife, when I started dating my wife, she suggested that I go to the Triangle Club before my shift. And, other than my boys, that was the best thing she ever gave me, man. I went down to the Triangle Club with about 35, 40 days and picked up a white chip and a 30-day chip in the same meeting. But getting a dose of AA before you go into the insanity of it, working a nightclub every night, it changed everything. It really just took the compulsion away. And I was revolted by alcoholism and drug addiction when I saw it at work, you know? And I had to deal with it front lines with my employees. And, you know, it was crazy. But it was almost easy. Because, I mean, I got a shot of it every night before I went into the insanity. And, I still stayed real involved in, CA and, did a lot of service. And like I said, my life turned around. And you know, I got married, had a couple of babies. I went back to school. It's amazing how good you can do in school if you just go to class. I mean, I went to class, every single class. You know? And honestly, I didn't study that much. And I was one grade from, graduating with honors. I thought I wanted to go into, my dad had an accounting practice, and I thought I would do accounting, and, I was doing a business core, and, I got to the end of those 2 years, and I was like, and plus I'm getting further into recovery, and I started thinking, I don't really want to crunch numbers, and so I switched over, and I started studying psychology, and I wound up getting my psychology degree at 36 years old. In 1997, I graduated from Georgia State with a degree in psychology. Then the next year, I got slammed upside the head. Out of nowhere, my wife wanted a divorce, and it wasn't pretty. And the program, the fellowship, saved my backside because never sober had I ever faced so much pain, ever. Never really lost a loved one. My great aunt I lost when I was loaded. Both my grandparents, I lost them when I was loaded. But I lost my family. I mean, I had the house, a couple couple of decent cars, two beautiful boys, live down the street from my kids to school. Business is thriving. My wife works part time. I mean, I had more work than I could imagine. I had my childhood dream job. You know, I worked out of the restaurant business into tennis. I was teaching tennis full time, something I wanted to do when I was a little kid. Everything was wonderful, and out of left field, you know, this comes, and it wasn't pretty. And I can remember driving down the road to go teach tennis and face, you know, six or eight people at a time, you know, whether they were kids or adults, and just bawling my eyes out. I'm in so much pain. And I can remember praying and something coming over me and just dried right up. And during that period of time, I had this sponsor who had actually got me through a really hard time a few years earlier because I was struggling with a character defect. And, you know, I'll be straight with you. I wanted to cheat on my wife. And I worked through this with the sponsor, you know. And he was still my sponsor. And he worked me through, and we really got into some 11th step stuff. And I really, I came to a new relationship with my higher power. And I came to understand how much my higher power loved me. And it was, the evidence was all there from how I got through all those scrapes, how I could be driving down the road and ask for help, and all of a sudden, you know, the pain has gone away and I stopped crying. And things completely changed for me and my relationship. I had a relationship with my higher power. I had been grateful to my higher power for removing the compulsion to drink or use, but I didn't really call on him much because taking away the drink and the drug allowed me to be human and go do human adult things. But I was still human in terms of being flawed and having defects. And things changed. Things changed. And really, really grateful. Now, a couple things happened during that period, one of which is I decided I was going to get loaded. And to this day, I define it as one of those moments where the only thing between me and that drink that night was God. Because I know where I was going. I planned it. I was just going to go to this bar and get some, you know, a beer and a Grand Marnier, and I was going to start. And I woke up the next day, and I hadn't had a blackout, but I wasn't sure exactly how I got home. I was like, I remember I was going to go. And, you know, basically I'd probably gone home and cried myself to sleep. But I didn't get loaded. And then I started fantasizing about a drug that was starting to get popular at the time, one that really takes away all the pain. And I called somebody in the rooms that I had heard that A, this was his drug of choice, and B, he'd been through a lot. And I called him up and I said, man, I'm obsessing over this drug. And the first thing he said was, if you pick up, I'm gonna kick your ass. And then the second thing he told me, which was really bizarre, was he said, look, you know, these are hard times, man. I understand that completely. He said, but you're gonna look back on this as the greatest thing that ever happened to you to date. I was like, you are out of your freaking mind. But he was bigger than I, so I didn't use. And he was right. I got through that divorce, and I was okay. And on a lot of levels, you know, I mean, I made a lot of mistakes. It was all about me in that marriage. I didn't know how to be a father. I mean, a husband. I think I was a pretty decent father, but I didn't know how to be a husband. I didn't know how to have a relationship. I just chased my dreams of work and career and education and did my thing, and we'd grown apart, and we didn't have a lot outside of the program. We didn't have much in common, so I got through it. And the fact of the matter is, I've gotten through a lot of stuff because of what I heard in these rooms. You know, When I got to the rooms and started coming, you know, I did not hear that I needed to get into the book okay, and do the steps. I didn't hear that. I really didn't. The fellowship helped me get sober. Now, I mean, I did, but but continuing to come to meetings, what I heard was, I did this, and this is the result I got from it. I did, as a matter of fact, when I heard, you need to come to this big book study so I can, or we can tell you exactly what every word in the book means, I was immediately, But when I heard people share what they did and the results they got, okay, then I was more susceptible. And so shortly after my divorce, I started looking again at some more of my character defects, and I started working with a new sponsor. And this sponsor wasn't in that other fellowship, not in this fellowship either, but it's kind of hard to explain, but I knew him through a guy and this stuff, and he was in a 12-step program, and I had a really good respect for him, and I just said, hey, you want to take me through the steps? And I mean, I'd been around 12-step programs longer than he had, and he said, sure. And so we got a big book, and we got a 12 and 12, you know, and we did the correlating work step by step, you know, over a few month period. And I discovered a whole lot more about myself, you know. Like going back to those first, you know, fake drunk and fake stoned experience, you know, I thought acceptance from others was the key to my happiness. And I found out that wasn't the case. But I had a tendency to do that, to just follow, to be a part of. But the really cool thing about recovery is that you know, I'm good with my higher power, man. I was seeing this counselor through this divorce, and we were talking about my earthly father, and trying to be accepted by him. And then we got into the conversation about my heavenly father. And the concept that my God loves me no matter how bad I screw up or how low I got, was just overwhelming to me. And it still is today, obviously. And with that, you know, I know that anything is possible. When I accept the love of my Father in heaven, man, I grow. I get honest about myself. I stop making excuses. He can empower me. He empowered me not to use or drink. He can empower me not to be an asshole. He can empower me not to be self-centered. And he can get me through anything. Coming up this summer, my current wife, I got remarried about 4 years after my divorce. And my current wife and I went through what we refer to as the storm. And, you know, no details are necessary, but it was worse than before. It was worse circumstances than before. And the first thing that I did, you know, was start reaching out to guys in the fellowship. And I got referrals. I mentioned this before, but what I found was is that if I come to enough meetings and I talk to enough people about my stuff, if my spot, like my first sponsor, when I went through that divorce, or that first long-term sponsor, went through that divorce, he gave me a referral. He said, look, yeah, I went through a divorce, but I didn't have kids, you know? And I wasn't even sober yet. And he said, I want you to go see this man. I don't want you to talk to him, and I work with that guy. And then when I went through this storm like 3 years ago, same thing. I started reaching out, you know, and I got a referral to somebody who'd been through something very, very similar. And I just can't tell you what ease and comfort there is from the experience of somebody else going through what you're going through, which is how this whole thing works anyway. You know, that first meeting I went to and I heard those people talking about their struggles, you know, with addiction, I immediately was drawn to it because I was one. I was one of them. And they taught me how to get through it and how not to use. And how to, you know, puke, how to get rid of my stuff. Early on, man, I was classic. Come into the meeting, puke about, you know, my employer or my mom or my sister or whoever wasn't acting the way I thought they should act, you know, and it worked. I heard down there at the Triangle Club, I heard pain shared is pain divided, and that love shared is love multiplied. And man, I grabbed that thing and I used it. And I still do today. I still do today. It means so much to me that that people care about whether or not I use or drink. You know, another miracle, you know, when I went through that divorce, there was this nasty court case a few months later. And there was this guy involved with my ex-wife, and he had been in and out of the program for many years. And we're going to this court thing. And it would have been to my advantage for this guy to crash and burn. And the strangest thing is I was praying for this guy to stay sober. You know, we're undergoing psychological and drug testing and all this stuff for this ugly custody battle. And the fact that this guy that I could not stand had a big old resentment for him. The fact that I didn't want the guy to get loaded says a lot about this program and what it did for me. You know, I mean, sure, there's people in the program that I don't care for, you know, but there's nobody that walks in these rooms that I want anything more for than to get sober and stay clean and sober, because it freaking sucks out there. In 2000, I lost my lifelong friend to this disease. Hal and I grew up together, played in the same sports programs, partied together. He was a couple of years younger than me. He comes home from Wisconsin, or comes down from Wisconsin after he graduated from high school, and I've already burned out at Georgia. And of course, we're partying it up before he leaves for Georgia. And I'm telling him, man, come on, study, you can do it, you know? And he lasted a little longer than I did. And he came home, and he's actually the one that introduced me to like smoking cocaine and intravenous drug use. And he actually wound up in treatment and got sober before I ever did. And he was there when my boys were born, and it was awesome. And then he went out, and he stayed out for a long time. And he would call me. I didn't let him know where I lived. I'd talk to him on the phone, but, you know, I'd built a life, and, you know, he called, wanted money, all this stuff. Anyway, but I run into him at a meeting one day, and he looks amazing. He picks up a six-month chip. He no longer looks like a extra from The Walking Dead. He got out of the restaurant business, and, you know, he was doing a remodeling gig, and he had a beautiful motorcycle, and I mean, he just looked great. I was so excited. I told him, you got to come see the boys, man. We got to get together. And it was awesome. And about 8 days later, I dropped my kids off from school, at school at 7:45 in the morning. I get a phone call on Monday after Mother's Day. And Trey, this is Jim. Jim was house father, and Al was gone. broke my heart. How was my little brother? Nobody knew me better than him, and nobody knew him better than me. For two reasons, we grew up together, and we were both drug addicts and alcoholics who had seen the dark side, had seen the light. But for whatever reason, you know, Hal chose to use that night, and he died. And it broke my heart. I talk to kids in high schools, and I tell the story a lot, particularly about Hal, because I'm one of the lucky ones. And something I've come to realize is in the last few years, really 10, I have not let myself get too close to newcomers in these rooms. And I know why. I moved here in 03, and yeah, I came to the rooms and worked my program, kept myself sober. You know, life on life's terms out there, for whatever reason, in the last year, I just kind of committed to coming to more meetings because I like the results. Makes me feel better. I deal with life on life's terms a lot better. But it wasn't until recently that I realized the reason I wasn't making myself available to newcomers was, I think it was the loss of Hal. Because I was there for him for a long time. You know, I wasn't going to be a sponsor. We were way too close for that. It was devastating to me. Never thought about using or anything. But you know, carrying his casket, speaking at his funeral, nothing worse than burying a loved one or a brother or a sister in this program. And I haven't been to a lot of funerals in the last 10 years because I haven't let myself get close enough. Went to a bunch my first 10 years in sobriety. That's something I've just kind of figured out in the last couple of weeks. But in one of the meetings I go to, or a lot of them, they'll say, if anything is affecting your sobriety today, please share about it in a general way. And I'm here to do that right now. Since sinking my feet, both feet, particularly here at the Howe Place in the last 12 months, I'm here to tell you that my sobriety has been affected in a most positive way. I am managing some unmanageable things. Well, not really, but I'm dealing with lots of unmanageable things outside these rooms. With some dignity, not always. And I couldn't do it unless I was immersed in these rooms and the process and the mirror that I have to look in every day. One of self-reflection, responsibility, adulthood. I don't want to be an adult. And I'm so grateful for that. You know, there's so few faces out there that I don't recognize. You know, it's comforting to see faces that you recognize. If you don't come on a regular basis, for me, I'm not going to be as comfortable. I'm very comfortable. I'm very grateful. I'm so grateful that you people, even though nobody in here was here when I got here at the meetings I went to, but you people taught me how to live this way. And your experience with those steps, with your sponsors, with your life on life terms out there, has allowed me to get through my life on life terms out there without drinking or drugging. That is a freaking miracle. I'll close with this. We live in the United States of America. You got to be grateful for that alone. And if you're a drug addict or an alcoholic, and you know the rooms, you know they exist, be grateful. Be grateful. And embrace the grace of God. Because it is by His grace that I stand here today. Don't spit into the grace of God. Don't gamble with your lives. Do the work. Follow suggestions. Listen. Hang out with us. Me, I hung out long enough that I heard what worked, and I do it. God bless you all. Thanks.